David Lee Roth no ar. Você sente a energia. É o David no rádio às 6 da manhã. You are connected to David Lee Roth. Prepare for combustion.
Young, be bad in the back there. David Lee Roth live in front of your naked, steaming eyes. Go ahead, play along, Brian. Go ahead, man. Live in the studio, baby. Go! Wow, Gene McFadden passed away. Elvis has left the building there, huh? Ain't no stopping us now. And that also goes along with Coretta Scott King, too, huh? A couple of Elvises have left the building, and I mean that with all due respect. A great people always arrive on the shoulders of one person or at a time, huh? You always need the soundtrack, right?
It's real.
And behind every great man is a very tired woman. I'm dovetailing a lot of Zen philosophies first thing in the morning here. I'm talking about, you know, Martin Luther King. Behind every great woman is a very tired guy with a smoking credit card. But that's a whole different subject. Animal.
Yeah. How you doing this morning, D-Row?
Smoking, baby.
Yeah.
So what? What were you doing when the song Ain't No Stopping Us Now actually came out? What year was that? Like 1980 or something? 1979, I think it was.
1979. I was on my way to college, man, when that happened.
Where'd you go to college?
Alabama State University in Montgomery, Alabama.
Were you going to play ball there? Did you play football?
Yeah, that's how I got there, on a football scholarship, man.
Who was your coach at the time?
Coach George James. We called him G-Man.
Why'd you call him G-Man?
Because that was Gorgeous George.
And this is where you lived in student housing, right?
Yeah.
And that's where you robbed the pizza man at gunpoint.
Oh, no. When we did that, we had, you know, like, after you become a sophomore, you have a choice to move off campus
or
stay on campus.
And you have a choice to move off campus or rob the pizza man. in a poetic sense.
Yeah, you can say that.
In a poetic way.
Yeah.
Be Young, Be Bad in the background there. He's playing guitar live with us here. Track slapping, baby. It's the ultimate karaoke. Go ahead, turn him up. People don't realize that, you're going to realize now? Mm-hmm. What we did is, I said to Brian earlier on here in the career, our career is now almost a month old, but I said to him way back when we were just starting off in our career, I said, you know, this may take a while, man. This may be a while here. I said, but if we work hard and we're focused, I think we can get places. And you know what? We worked and we worked and we practiced and we worked and we practiced. And that night, we were pretty good. But I said to Brian earlier on, I think what we're going to be doing here is somewhere between what the guys in Led Zeppelin do for a living and what Letterman and Paul Schaefer do for a living here. And that's what we invented, the ultimate, I call it track slapping. What all of the music in the background here is actually my own stuff, all right? And I took out all the guitars and all the vocals so that you have something lively, you know, for all the conversation and everything, the phone calls and, you know, the harsh recriminations and whatever shows up on our easel from the Daily. But this is all my stuff, and I took out, as you hear it in the background, so that B. Young here could show up. And, you know, he and I play together in the rock band as we, you know, travel around the countryside. And anytime you hear guitar or any ukulele or anything like that in the background, that's actually live music. Go for it, baby. Swing it on. Say it. But now it's time for some real talent. Now it's time for American Idol. I watched that last night. I was fascinated. I was transfixed. And I got to admit, there are some serious high points. And there are some, well, of course, there's serious low points, but I'm not sure if the serious low points aren't what I actually tuned in for. So this is sort of a self-investigation. This would be like an episode in my reality series, okay? Kelly Clarkson, I get. I think she's got like a voice, okay? I think that she's got a certain presence, even though it's the kind of traditional girl next door, past the potatoes kind of a presence, and I understand that. It represents, just the same way that I think Britney represents to the same community of people. And maybe since everybody plays The Voice, think of it as a musical instrument, that, most of us don't play it very well. It's like most of us don't pilot an automobile very well, but we still drive. And that's where you do your singing, right? Okay. And we don't sing very well. One of the most endearing things about one of my last girlfriends, Stacy, was that she sang along with everything and knew the lyrics to nothing. I thought that was the most adorable thing I ever saw. Well, not the most adorable, but the third or fourth most adorable thing that I ever saw. I hear Hutch laughing larcenously in the background. Don't expect me to say larcenous three times in a row. Hutch, how are you this morning?
I'm good, Dave. How are you?
I'm about halfway into my Red Bull sugar-free, and
oh,
I'm
my God.
About to commit philosophy. Sasha, how are you, sweetie? Oh, baby. 866-313-3733. As you can tell, I'm about to riff on the American Idol phenomenon. It's a phenomenon, but I don't think it's entirely a brand new phenomenon. For all those of us who remember Star Search or Ed McMahon. Well, Ed McMahon was Star Search.
Yeah, Star Search.
Or The Gong Show. And I think you have a delicate house blend on American Idol at this point in time. I think that you have the best of both those shows. Mm-hmm. I myself know that there's going to be some talent in terms of the singing, but that it's going to be wholly unrefined because almost every single person on that show is lazy. It's just that simple.
And most of them have never done a gig in their life.
Well, that's what I mean by lazy, because there's a million opportunities to get involved, with a million different kinds of, music and whatever. There's a million different places to go ahead and practice, whether it's the church, whether it's club, or what have you, all right? I think that you have a lot of folks who decided to take a diet pill. You got a lot of people who have decided to, staple their stomach instead of just trying the diet first. Hey, if the diet doesn't work, great. Do whatever you got to do. And I'm speaking about this poetically. In music, if you went out and you started a band or you got up in the choir or the glee club, I imagine they still have that in grade school or whatever, then, you're going to be able to exercise your voice and you're going to start hitting the notes a little better. You're going to start to get an idea of performance on stage. But that takes a lot of effort. You're going to have to show up more than 2 days a week after school for an hour with a tutor that your parents paid for. And even that is stressful. I used to play saxophone. I played saxophone from 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th grade. I was in the marching band in junior high school. And it's why you always hear brass in the backgrounds. Turn it up. Here you go. My aunt and uncle, Peter and Pearl Zukofsky, were first and second clarinet in the L.A. Philharmonic back in the early 70s as well. And so I started playing the saxophone and reed instruments, and they were my tutors along with several other very unimpressed women. And even just that simple act of, doing that kind of tutoring quickly becomes, you got to do the homework, man. I drove everybody on the block crazy, with I Left My Heart in San Francisco. And just that part. Oh, I discovered sampling very early in my career. And I would just sample the best part and play it over. I left my heart in San Francisco. Again. In San Francisco. Hey, now I got a Grammy. But I was watching what's happening with American Idol. And what I'm seeing coming out on that stage is a lot of potential. And I'm sure there's a lot of people up there who will tell you how high their IQ is. And there's a lot of folks who will tell you what genius their family was, or that they're doing it for their family, and that's why they didn't, you know, practice or actually find a gig somewhere. It's a cut corner. And I think the most impressive thing is about the judges. When you watch Simon Cowell at this point in time, you can tell he's getting angry. You can tell that he's getting a little bit jumpy about the amount of wasted time, you know, that he's getting.
Excuses he's about to hear.
Oh, definitely. And then the excuses become very familiar after a point in time. I understand the element that follows through with the gong show element, okay? And I find that that's entertaining to a degree. But I think a lot of those people are just goofing intensely, and they're trying to create something funny, as opposed to William Hung, who I think was serious about what he was doing, okay? I think William Hung was... he really thought he had something going. Come on, we all do. You don't get on stage, especially as a singer, without something in between you and the audience, like a drum set or a marimba or a bass. You know, that's, you're putting something in between yourself there. When you just stand up and sing and dance, you're making a commitment. And I think it's clearly easy to see the ones who've created a kind of what they think is a funny character, and they're never funny. Well, it takes some kind of a comedic skill to create that kind of theater. Charlie Chaplin was a great example of Harold Lloyd. You know, the silent comedians were the best at it. It's when somebody doesn't know that they're screwing up that it's the most funny. When it becomes a guilty pleasure, like watching on a reality series or something like that. You follow? I think that the ones who seem to have the most talent, I don't see anybody on that show last night who actually put any real effort into what they're doing. And no, I don't include standing in the bathroom mirror and singing. I still do that. Everybody does that. I mean, in terms of, did you actually go get a gig? Did you commit to learning the skills the right way? And I think I know the reason that this kind of talent, or the lack of it. No, it's not even a lack of talent. I think that it's a lack of any refinement of the talent at all, because people don't want to rehearse. They don't want to do the homework. They don't want to go get the gig. And the gig is the homework. Believe me, if you have anything to add at all, vocally, instrumentally, or whatever, there's a place for you to play either disco or country or the blues or R&B or the latest hip-hop or the latest rock or the latest alterno.
Well, Dave, like what you're saying about Jessica Simpson, you never see her on the reality shows talking about music, singing music, and they're learning from her, watching her and go, oh, she never practices.
That's an excellent point. When you watch, you know, something that involves Lohan or, that's almost a blues name, isn't it? Lohan. Gotta play with a Lohan. There's a Lohan. Got the Lohan song. Hey, at least I got my health going for me. I think you're absolutely right in terms of what's going on with, Ashley Simpson.
Shows him doing the hair a lot, though.
I think that in terms of what's going on with where people learn music has changed radically. All right. It's more difficult to find a place to actually learn playing somebody else's music. And that's what you got to do. You can't just sing into your hairbrush in front of the bathroom mirror and think that that's going to refine your skills. Just like anybody who punches the heavy bag down at the gymnasium 2 days a week after school. Once they step into a ring where with an actual opponent with the lights on and the guy in the tuxedo screaming your name, very different. Like they say in China, very different. Roth Radio, very different. 866-313-3733. Steve, talk to me. What are you doing on the phone so early, Holmes?
Hey, Dave, how are you, man?
Extraordinary friend. What's cooking?
You're exactly right. What about the cut corners on American Idol, man? Like, I'm doing this pro wrestling thing. And a few years ago, they had this show called Tough Enough, where all these guys could sign up and take, like, the shortcut into the business.
Oh, I think I saw this. I'm familiar with this show.
And it just totally just jumps over all these, like, hardworking guys who are, like, on the minor leagues just scraping by trying to make it, man.
I think what happens, particularly in music, is that it takes so many hundreds of endless hours of repetition. And that means in home, and it also means on the stage. And that means you're going to dedicate your whole life to it. One of the reasons, you may have heard the name Django Reinhardt. He's one of the most famous of the jazz guitarists coming out of the 20s and the 30s and whatever. One of the reasons, and he was very open about this, that he was so good on the guitar is that gypsies didn't have a living. They sat around in front of their trailers. The women handled the horses. The kids fed the animals. The women took care of the food. And the men smoked, drank red wine, and played instruments.
I like that.
And he likes that.
Well, I like that.
Well, I would say that.
And he was very open about that back in the 30s, saying, this is why I'm so good. In fact, he suffered a terrible tragedy, burned off most of the fingers of his left hand, had two fingers left, and he still was the Eddie Van Halen of his generation. Because he said out loud, because I sat around for endless hours doing this. And when you make the commitment, you can hear it. When somebody makes that commitment, you can hear it. Have you seen anybody, Steve, that's on that show that has stuck out at you? Because I've seen a few people. Has anybody actually stuck out at you in a positive sense?
I don't want to sound hypocritical, but I won't even watch it, you know, because I'm just bad against it. I just think if you're going to commit yourself, I mean, just have the dedication and make it your own way and pay the dues.
Okay, I think that what we're talking about is getting a gig somewhere where you're going to sing. And it's mostly singers. It's all singers. So finding a place where you can sing in front of people over and over and over again. And something radical changed in the late 70s that changed the face of music forever. And what we're experiencing today is a result of that. Steve, thanks for giving us a call. 866-313-3733, Roth Radio. Can you guess what that is, Brian? What changed in the late 70s that made such a difference in music? I mean, it's an obvious thing. You're probably not going to figure it out. Go ahead. Try it.
I absolutely have no idea what you're talking about. I know that music styles changed. New wave came out.
Oh, keyboards, absolutely.
Guitar playing started taking a dip.
Well, the reason that guitar playing and a whole lot of instrumental capacity started taking a dip is because the clubs started closing up. Okay? They started closing up the places where you would go play what we called the left-hand side of the Billboard chart. My job in Van Halen early on was to tear off the left-hand side of the Billboard chart, figure out what songs could be turned into a three-piece rock band kind of an element, okay, that were funky enough to be what we call girl-friendly. The reason that I knew what girl-friendly was is because I was playing music over in integrated schools. I was in schools that were all black and Spanish-speaking. That was all funk music. That was all Motown and all that kind of stuff, see?
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, I was the only one who knew how to dance. Watch. Go, baby! Then what happened in the late 70s is Sirwin Vega developed a way to make saleable bass cabinets, so you got a little boom. Now everybody's got the boom. You even got the boom in your car. You probably got the boom on up full in your car right now.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. Animal, do you agree that an automobile is nothing but a transport system for a stereo?
Of course, because that's how you, like down south, if you want to sell a black man a car, just long as the radio work, you don't even care if it don't got a motor in it. Long as it got music, they will buy it, man.
Well, there's a certain wisdom to that.
Yeah.
Well, as you know, I'm not black, but I have black rage, and yeah, I'm with you. I don't care if there's a motor in it or not either.
Yeah. But like the 70s, man, it, you know, it was like a movement for me and stuff. You know, I came through, you know, the immigration thing and the clothes that we wore, man, was like out of this world. Company called Flag Brothers and Bill the Hatter with their big hats and the big collar shirts. I had shirts like you've been in a paint explosion, every color on the color wheel that we wear. And if you didn't have that, you just wasn't cool, man, you know?
That's right.
Yeah, I had the big old hats and stuff with the feathers in them and stuff, man.
Hold on. I want to index this entire wardrobe here, and I'm going to tie it into what we were speaking about right after this.
Right. Rock Radio, baby.
David Lee Roth Mornings.
Пожаловать в клуб, Дэйв. Мы здесь вам позволяем говорить только «Добро пожаловать». Rough, 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 rough radio.
Hey, brother, what's going on?
Oh, brother.
I'm here to do it live for you.
Oh,
thank you.
That is the weirdest fake Jamaican accent.
Oh, bro, don't be like that.
Oh, man. Brother.
Come on.
Hey, brother. I
then I'll be right here.
I got a question for you, Doug.
But I'm going to answer like this, brother.
Okay, then, Mike.
Let's see. I'll be the selector.
Let's say you had to go on American Idol right now. Let's say Van Halen, as a band, maybe had to check out American Idol. What would your approach be on that? What would you be thinking in front of Simon and the rest of them?
Well, you start thinking long before... I dropped the accent.
Damn it. All right, let's start again. Now, I'm going to start this again, okay? I'm going to start this again, just like you do.
Irie, brother.
All right. Hey, Dave.
Irie, brother.
If you had to go on American Idol, if Van Halen had to go on American Idol, what would your approach be in front of Paula and Simon and the rest of the gang? What do you think?
Well, the first thing you do, brother, is you don't make affectation. I know so you don't put on a fake voice, you don't wear the wig, brother, you don't wear the shoe, brother. First thing you put inside is the tree, not the tinsel.
I turn Pakistani.
Damn it.
All right.
No, don't. Please don't. It's a damn good question, actually. And I think that the prep for this kind of a show starts long before you actually walk out there. And I don't mean a few days or a few weeks or just working, you know, in front of your family or whatever. If you're a singer, okay, and I've used this a number of times before, and I hope I'm not, well, of course I'm giving away one of my best tricks. But one of the best places that you can do singing and that you will get a really true response. If you're great, you will get the applause of a lifetime, and you will never forget it, and you will tell the story to your grandkids. And if you suck, you will have the worst experience, and people will make the noise to you in the most religious way. What do you have an expectant look here? Well, see, that comes from the heart. He really means that. And if he did what I'm about to explain, put the loop back on. Now, William Hung's coming from the heart. I think he really meant what he was doing. And here's the place that you go and sing. You get your band together. You get the background singers together, etc. And you go to a movie theater. And before the coming attractions come on, you get up in front of the front row. I've done this with a number of guys before where we do like Four Tops kind of Temptations sort of harmony. Oh, yeah, that kind of a thing. Yeah. And like the Persuasions or whoever. And you get up in front of that audience who's waiting for the coming attractions and for the movie to come on. And if you are great, you will get a standing ovation. And I deny anybody to tell me any movie guy who owns the movie place, who owns the theater, to stop you, because the audience will be loving it. Oh, and then there will be times when you screw it up and you will not make it through the whole song like William Hung, because people are waiting for something else. It's a great place to test this out. If you got the marbles to get up in front of a completely strange crowd, my point being, there's always a place to go ahead and rehearse your gig. Everybody there is doing a singer thing, and they're doing all the tinsel instead of the tree. You got the wigs, you've got the fake accent, you've got the dance moves, and none of those are terribly well-prepared.
What you just said made me think of something about the preparation. I think there's a lot of people that go on this show that get the idea to become a singer when they hear the auditions are coming to town.
Exactly.
And they go, hey, I'm going to be a singer.
I can do that.
They don't have to pick up an instrument.
They're the most recent idea. They're stepping through the door that opens. Give us a top there. James wants to talk about American Idol. 866-313-3733. Woo, the phones are lit up. James, you're on. What's cooking?
Hey, man. What's going on? How you doing?
Excellent, James. What's up?
Hey, you know, he's sitting here talking about the kids having idols like Britney Spears and stuff. You know, it's up to the parents to... push these kids, to push our kids, and, you know, if they want to be in music, to get them out there into the music lessons, and to make sure that they have the proper instructions before they go out. You know, you get these fly-by-night, what's going to happen with Britney Spears when those looks are gone? Where's she going to be doing? She's going to be making B-movies, you know?
No, she'll be doing Learning Annex kind of seminars, like, you know, the folks from the reality series, or she'll be selling, cleansers and, you know, home things like that housewives use, etc. She's already involved in something coming up right away, actually, that's like that. She's... No, this is the wrong nose pointing. That's not the Britney Spears item. Actually, there is a Britney Spears item. She's going to be a guest on Will and Grace, and she's going to play. Here's the answer, actually, to your question. What's she going to do? She's going to become the new Christian conservative sidekick for one episode on Will and Grace, and you know that she's going to follow the Valerie Bertinelli freeway into that kind of a thing. She'll be on Mormon programming, or she'll be on the Oxygen Channel or the Women's Channel, etc., and then someday she'll have a talk show of herself. And will you watch it, James?
Yeah, I'm just so negative with her, man. I don't want to see any of that.
Well, I'm kind of negative, too, but I love seeing it specifically for that reason. Call me twisted. Yeah. Some people do. Thanks for calling. 866-313-3733. We have somebody here who actually auditioned for the show. We're talking about American Idol. I'm David Lee Roth, Roth Radio. John, you're good to go. What's up?
Yeah, man. I just want to say it's a bunch of crap, dude.
What, my show or theirs?
The American Idol thing, man. A lot of people went there with a lot of talent. And what ended up happening was they weren't the right look, or they weren't the right, you know, pop idol, what the mainstream media is really looking for.
Okay, now are you saying the mainstream media, or that the trio of judges who are there are looking for a specific type? Is that what you're thinking?
Well, I went out for the first one, you know, and I'm one of them grunge rock singers. I've been like a rock band for like 10 years. Playing the guitar, doing my thing, you know.
Okay, and where are you calling us from?
I'm actually on the Long Island Expressway right now.
Oh, okay, and you're the vocalist, I take it, right?
Lead guitar, man.
Okay. Oh, you're the lead guitarist. Oh, because I was going to have you sing a few bars. Do you sing at least? Well, what did you do in front of the American Idol judges that you're an instrumentalist? Did you play an instrument or did you sing?
I gotta say, man, I sung Pure Imagination from Willy Wonka.
Oh, well, I think that's great. Can you sing it to us while you're on the highway? Come on, you're a New Yorker here. You drive with one hand, sing with the other.
You got it.
Go ahead. Turn off the track here, Hutch. Go ahead. You're on.
All right.
Go ahead.
Come with me, and you'll be in a world of pure imagination. And all that other stuff there.
Oh, man. No. You got to continue, because I'm going to use it as part of my theme song for, like, introductions and stuff. I've been using Natasha Bedingfield and some other faces and stuff like this. We're tape recording this, and I'm going to sample it, and I'm going to bootleg it and sell it without your knowledge. Now, I want you to give us a great performance, because there's virtually 1.5 million fans listening to you now. Finish out the phrase so at least I can use it for my answering machine or something. Go ahead.
I got to say, man, it is an absolute pleasure to sing in the company.
I wish I could extend the same compliment. Go ahead. Here we go.
That's such a legend, man.
Well, I got to hear you sing before I can extend the same compliment. Go for it. Here we go.
Hey, I'm embarrassed, dude.
Well, so am I, but go ahead. Here we go. Hit it. I'm going to turn you off. You don't hit it.
Nah, I can't do it, dude.
That's why you didn't make it on American Idol.
Well, this is why you didn't make it on American Idol. I want you to reconsider the proposition and give us a call back when you get the muscle to call to sing the song. And I'm quite serious. 866-313-3733. That was a moment. Okay, that was a moment.
You gave him his chance.
Oh, totally. We gave him a chance. And I can tell you, you know, that if he actually whipped it, if he actually sang the chicken off the bone over his cell phone out on the turnpike, that he would have, there was something would have sparked up out of that, because there's 1.5 million people there. Dukes, what do you got to say, babe?
I have a question. If somebody wanted to sing one of your songs on American Idol, would you give them the permission?
Oh, absolutely I would. Are you kidding? I got Paul Anka sings a version of Jump. I just did a country version of, well, I'm not going to tell you what it is because it comes up in a couple of months. I've heard hip-hop versions of Running with the Devil. I got extended versions of stuff I did with Steve Vai. You bet. This music transcends it in the neighborhood. You bet.
But like Bruce Springsteen won't let the kids sing his songs.
I wonder why not. What's the implication, do you think?
Maybe he thinks they'll butcher them and they'll sound awful.
No, I think, you know what he might be afraid of? Is that when he did not living in the USA, that was Steve Miller, Born in America, right?
Born in the USA.
Born in the USA. A lot of people thought that was a war song. A lot of people accepted that as fist in the air, like marching orders. And he always maintained that that was an anti-war song and that it had been mischaracterized into a marching kind of a song. So if that's perhaps what he was thinking of. But you're just saying no as far as trashing the melody and not making it through?
Yeah, the other thing they do is they'll just do like one verse and then write to the chorus, even if the chorus doesn't go there.
Yeah.
Just to shorten it.
Okay, so probably what he's saying is that there's more content here, that there's something more to it than just to be used to sell a product.
Just want Bruce Light.
Yeah, and he's probably not out of that. He's probably thinking that there's more content, especially if somebody takes, like, the song about Philadelphia, the AIDS song, you know, went along with the movie with Tom Hanks or whatever, and you turn into that into a ruined pop moment for the edification of Paula Abdul. In my twisted sense of the world, yes, that's a wonderful theatrical move, and that stands as genius. But in his world, it stands as a negative. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do agree.
Okay.
And a couple years ago on Idol, they used to do like Elton John night where they had to do an Elton John song or Billy Joel night. They sort of stopped that last year.
I wonder why they did that. Is it because they couldn't have one neighborhood love one person the whole time?
Well, I think what they used to do is they would bring the artist on, and then the artist would never say anything bad about the version of their song that the performer just did. So it was like sort of boring for TV.
Okay, so everybody was trying to do a sell there, all right? I think probably more likely is that they have, if you have Elton John, that appeals to a certain generation, a certain ethnic background. I don't know, are white people ethnic? Animal, are white people considered an ethnic group?
Pretty much.
Pretty much? Like most of the white people, or pretty much most people, what, explain this to me.
They pretty much ethnic, I guess, man.
Ethnic.
Yeah. I'm from, you know, I'm country. I can get away with
I'm
it.
I'm going to practice talking like you from now on, man.
Cool, man. You'll be the coolest guy ever.
Do you ever wonder why Paula Abdul, being supposedly a professional singer, has never sang on American Idol?
Well, now she's, you know, those who can't do, teach.
Judge.
And those who can't teach, judge.
Critique.
And critique. And those who can't critique, do the learning annex. And those who can't do the learning annex, wind up as my intern.
You know, I've heard someone on there was pretty good last year when I was watching, but I hadn't really watched it.
Okay, hold that thought, because I can tell that there's going to be an illumination here. Roth Radio, okay. David Lee Roth, large and in charge. Don't go away.
David Lee Roth in the mornings.
Nice to meet all of you.
Are you the next American Idol?
Yeah.
Really? Are you just cursed? We're not allowed to do that. It's a family show.
Oh, well, I'm not a family guy.
Oh, okay. Can't wait to hear what you're going to sing.
I'm going to sing Silverstein, Smashed Into Pieces. Is that cool?
Go for it.
Why not?
Ready? You ready for
this?
Never again! Out of my throat! With the knife I throat! Out of my throat!
Maybe when you find out that I'm dead, you realize what you did.
No! Never out! Let I go!
Oh, they're cracking up out there, baby. Play it, Be Young, go for it. Roth Radio. Hey, I'm even developing the fake laugh. It's the Simon Cowell fake laugh. It's contagious. See, now that guy who was just on there, that was the American Idol. I don't know when he was on. It was not. That's you playing the guitar. It sounds like he's in the track, doesn't it? Listen to that. Yeah, go ahead. Play. Live in the studio, Brian Young. How long did it take you to learn to play guitar like that, Brian? How many years did it actually take you to do that?
Now, I've been playing for 29 years now, but I've been able to play like this for 20 years.
Oh, yeah. You've been on the case for a while. Brian and I have been touring together for quite some time there. We play Stump the guitarist. We never play him the loop that's coming up. And if he's got to guess the key and he's got to guess the groove and he's got the guitars, he's got an arsenal of equipment back there. And it's kind of Paul Schaefer, but really sped up. Play it, baby. Go ahead. Taking calls here. We're talking about American Idol. Go from the top there. John, what about the quality of music? You're on, John. Go ahead.
Yeah, how you doing, Dave?
Great, man. What's up?
Well, I just wanted to talk about, like, kind of roll back for a second. You were talking about, like, the quality of music and people actually taking care and really loving the craft. And just like how you said, the state of music has changed. I went to school with one of your lesser talks about contemporaries, Billy Sheehan.
Oh, no, he's not a lesser contemporary. Bill is a spectacular bass player and a spectacular singer. You know, he's making a lot of music even as we speak. Where did you guys go to school?
Oh, I was living in Pittsburgh at the time. I sold everything I owned pretty much, so I had the money to move out to Hollywood, California.
Are you a singer yourself?
Sorry?
Are you a singer yourself?
Well, actually, I'm a bass and sax player.
Okay, and your opinion of what's going on American Idol is positive or negative?
It's generally kind of negative in that there's a lot of people that just kind of like accept like substandard type of talent.
Do you think we accept the substandard type of talent because we feel that there's nothing better out there, or is it just entertaining to watch people flounder?
I think it's been so long since like real good music has been happening that there's less and less people that actually remember how the good music was made in the first place.
Well, I think the reason that thanks for calling, by the way. I think the reason that you have such a difference in music that came perhaps from the 60s and 70s, not stylistically, just people being efficient with their voices, playing, you know, with their instruments, and whether that's an educated by a professional teacher or whether that's quote-unquote self-taught, there is really no such thing as self-taught. You have to get on stage in front of somebody, whether, again, it's the choir at church or whether it's in front of a packed movie theater doing a cappella or even just me saying to somebody over the telephone, go ahead and sing. That fella had a sterling chance here to do something unique, and he just froze.
Blew it.
He literally froze. And that's the kind of thing that you train out of yourself once you start getting out onto doing gigs regularly. The difficulty now is there are so few places that cover bands, people who play already what exists. Where else are you going to learn to play your music? There's a lot of bars and clubs that I know of where you can play original material. Tons of them. Open up the Village Voice and the Back Pages there. There's a lot of clubs where there's a lot of really good new talent, whether it's downtown or, you know, up in Midtown, any kind of music, whether it's a DJ or New Age or even, you know, the Brazilian reggaeton. It's, you know, there are a lot of places for original. But where do you learn the skill to put music together? Where do you learn your craft on the stage there? What?
I was going to ask you, where did you actually realize that you had a voice? When, I mean, obviously way back then, but like, what was it that triggered that? When did you realize you had a voice and you could go up and do it in front of a crowd?
We started doing it in front of clubs. You start playing 5 45-minute sets a night. And again, we had a list of over 200 songs with Van Halen. They were all everything from the Ohio Players to Led Zeppelin, everything from James Brown to Aerosmith, you know. And I was, you know, the narrator in between. And we ran everything from dance clubs to weddings to graduations, you name it.
Man. But before that, was with your hairbrush in the shower, what was
the... Oh, that's a good question.
What was your triggering point? You know,
my first starring role, I was 7 years old in Massachusetts. And I was in Brookline in student housing. My dad was going to medical school at the time, riding a bicycle to medical school. And my mom was doing everything she could to get the kids out of the house at that point in time. And the class play, I forget the name of the class play, but my first starring role was Mr. Bookworm. And there were huge, like, book covers of all the classics and everything. And we'll turn up the music. I can even sing you the first line of the riff.
Oh, this is good.
There we go. My name is Mr. Bookworm. I hope you like to read. That's all I remember. But that's pretty... It turned black since the time that I actually sang it there, but that was actually it. And my mother just gave me, she found the glasses that she had made for me, little black plastic rim glasses made to look really thick, and a mortarboard hat that she had made for me, like a professor. Animal, you got a thought on this.
What was there a difference between you playing in small clubs and big arenas? Did you prepare for both of them the same way, or was it a difference?
No, you prefer to perform exactly the same way. One of the biggest mistakes, and that's a great question, is that you spread out thinking that you have to fill the big stage. Big error. When we saw Axl Rose try to do that on the MTV Awards a couple of years ago with the supposed refab of Guns N' Roses, he had 11 people up there, and instead of you hold your ground, you sit your band tight, just like in a small club, and work out and then return, work out and return. Think of it like fencing. You go out and return. You go out and return. What he did is he tried to run from the 50-yard line, then run to the 100-yard line, then run for the other goal, and he's out of gas halfway through the second song. And there's a lot of distraction to that. You keep the band the same way. The only real difference is that the groupies are better.
Okay.
He thinks I'm kidding.
No, I believe that. I've seen some of your groupies, man.
But we did 45-minute sets, 5 45-minute sets, and that is the way that you get your band and your act together. I started off singing in the class play. Let me get back to that. Mr. Bookworm was the routine, and I was the only kid in the class who could memorize all the lyrics. I was the only kid in the class who, you know, was my parents, you know, coming from an academic background, forced me to learn the thing. My mom worked with me, you know, and that was a supported issue because Uncle Manny was in showbiz, and Uncle Manny was kind of sharing some cash with the other uncles, the other brothers, so they could get through school, and everybody had kind of seen showbiz work anyway. It had been an important part of the family, so.
And that, from that step, doing the bookworm thing, which was, I've got to tell you, it was absolutely marvelous. Thank you very much for that.
Stellar.
But from that step, I'm guessing just from the style, that you went on and sang the blues.
Well, I went on to go into the busing program, which was in Southern California. And, you know, I started playing music again, you know, in the orchestra and the marching band and that kind of thing. And I went on to sing in whatever was available to me at the time, whether it was the school singing club or, you know, the choir or what have you, you know. Just anything at all that was available to me. Let's take another call here. Yeah. Talking about American Idol. Jim, you're on. Go for it. Roth Radio, live. Hit me.
Good morning, Mr. Roth.
What's up?
Hey, man. I was just going to make a general comment that, you know, as the contest furthers, I think a lot of these contestants, they just choose the wrong songs. I've watched American Idol over, like, the last, you know, since the first season. And I'm always wondering why they choose to pick some of the songs they choose to sing, you know? But I just wanted to know what you thought about that. And what's the name of the British guy there that's with you?
Hutch.
Hey, Hutch, I mean, the best kind of music, man, is Brit Rock. Aqualung, Coldplay.
Wow.
Okay, let me speak to your first part of your thought out here, is that what people are picking the kinds of music based on the kind of person I think they'd like to be, instead of actual musical content or musical quality, because I don't think it's possible with all the millions and millions of songs that are out there for everybody to just somehow coincidentally, miraculously miracle their way into choosing the same Whitney Houston song. It's just not Vegas odds dependable. It just would not happen that way. However, we are dependably able to find an entire voter block of young ladies who would love to be Whitney Houston, arguably the before picture, not the after picture. So virtually every third girl is going to reach out there and go, "And I will always love you," which sounds a lot like "My name is Mr. Bookworm."
I like the bookworm one better, actually.
Well, you know, I sampled it from the past, and I shared my sources there. I never wanted to be Whitney Houston. But that's true. You know, that in terms, you see this of actresses as well. We now have an entire voter block of young actresses who want to be Jennifer Aniston. I don't think they have any interest really in acting, but they would like to be Jennifer and everything that comes along with being Jennifer. So you can tell. You can tell who's imitating who like that. And I think that's how people pick their given songs. Plus, there's nothing more difficult than singing a cappella. In the studio, we call it Acapulco. Singing Acapulco is tough stuff. It takes hundreds of hours of wherever you sing to be able to do that. And one of the reasons that this isn't ringing true in your ear isn't even so much the song selection as they just didn't put the time in. They just didn't finish the job. Go for it up here on, let's see what Brittany did her time. This is interesting. Mike, give it to me. Roth Radio, you're large. Go ahead.
Hey, D-Row.
Yo.
Just wanted to say, man, you know, you're saying how everybody wants, like, a quick, want to get to the top without the work, and that's true, but, you know, Britney, Justin Timberlake, them kind of people, who, believe me, I don't listen to that stuff, you got to give them their credit. They've been doing this since they were 5 years old, you know, they did the Mouseketeers thing, and you know, they put in their work, they did their time for it, you know what I mean?
I'm wondering, and I'm going to agree with you, I'm wondering if they become jacks of all trades. Okay, just as music today has taken a different kind of a view in terms of what we look for when we're buying music, and the stuff that plays music is very different than in the 60s or the 70s. In the 60s and the 70s, in example, we always looked for stereos that made the music sound better. anything to make the music sound better, all right? Today, we're looking for the kinds of gear that contains the most music, and the sound quality can take a little beating. You can MP3 it, we can share files, we send it digitally, etc., etc. And I'm wondering if their generation that you just described, Britney, Justin Timberlake, Lohan, and these characters here, are doing the same thing. Instead of looking for quality, they're spreading out and going like Paris Hilton said in Page Six yesterday, I'm a brand. Are they becoming a brand? And they look at themselves not so much as musicians, but yes, part musician, but also part salesperson, part dancer, part actress, part religious guru, part wife, part mom. And then you become a jack of all trades and perhaps a master of none. What do you think?
Well, I think that that's what the public's looking for, and they're just business people feeding into that.
I always grew up thinking that if you were a true artist, that you kind of led the way. Let's talk about that right after this.
David Lee Roth, weekday mornings,